In this week's episode, Kate Perry is joined by Kay Keane. Kay is from the Institute of General Practice Management. They're going to discuss the different roles within GP practice management and cover the benefits of becoming a member of the IGPM. This episode will not only be of interest to those with a specific role in practice management, but also GP partners who have such team members within their practice. Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Accountancy on Prescription. Today I'm joined by Kay Keane from the Institute of General Practice Management. Hello, Kay.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
That's great. It's good to have you join us today. So today we're going to be talking about the issues that face practice management today. So, Kay, you're in that role. Why don't you tell us about how you see your position?
So, yeah, I'm a full-time practice manager. I work at Urban Village Medical Practice, and we're in the city centre in Manchester. Quite a unique practice. So we look after a cohort of general practice patients, probably about 13,000 of those. And then we manage the homeless healthcare service for the city centre. So that we do that on a specially commissioned service. There's probably about 800 people that are experiencing homelessness at any one time, which, you know, I'm always shocked when I say that number, because that sounds an awful lot of people in the worst position, because without a safe home, then nothing else kind of works, does it, if you've not got that
right.
Safe
you need
place.
A permanent address, really, to get on lists or anything. Yes.
Yeah. Although we shouldn't be asking for addresses to register with a GP. That's one of my little bugbears that some practices.
No, I understand. That's a fairly recent change, I think, that
yeah, so
that's a requirement.
That's right. We should be offering cheap primary care services to everybody. So yeah, it's a job I've been in for just over a year. I moved from a practice that I thought I'd be in for the rest of my career, but I saw the job here and I've always admired this practice and the work that they do around health inequalities. So I moved, and you know, both practices are amazing and both entirely different. And I think whichever practice manager that you'll talk to will know that, well, and you as accountants will know that we all have different personalities. Each practice is different. You know, we might be a single-handed, or we might be a multi-site, single PCN, 50,000 patients. But within that organisation, there will be at least one person that does a practice management role. In a larger practice, that might be a team of people. In mine, there's myself and there's two operation managers, and then we have leads on our reception desk. Or you might have a larger practice where there's six, seven, eight people working in a management role. So yeah, it's a vast job, and certainly one that's changed over the years. You know, when I first started working in general practice a long, long time ago, it was often the kind of receptionist that had got promoted. But now it is a professional career, and one that we as the IGPM want to inspire people to come and join.
That's right. I can confirm that when I started being a medical specialist accountant, which I won't say how long ago it was, but it was a very long time ago, before the 2004 contract, should I say.
Well, my first job after working in reception, my first kind of management job was in fund holding. So
yes, I remember fund holding.
I go back a long way. There's not many of us that say, oh yeah, I remember fund holding.
Well, I remember the red book, dare I say.
Well, yeah, same.
But
we're old.
But you're right. So the role, when I started taking on clients, I think we only ever had somebody called a practice manager in all our practices. We didn't even have, rarely had support because the practices were smaller. So you're right, the practice has changed significantly over the last few years. So we used to have sort of a large practice back then was anything over sort of 8,000 patients. Mm. Now, a large practice, you know, is over 20,000 patients.
That's right.
A lot of our clients are in the teens. We still have the small ones. I've still got ones that are only 3,000, single-handed with 3,000. But the role of the practice management is very different. And I think what I can say from what I know about our clients is a practice is run by a partnership of GPs. And a person chooses to become a GP because they want to be a doctor. So they go to medical school and they do all the clinical side of it. And then they get thrown into a doctor's surgery, invited to become a partner, and suddenly they're running a small business. And actually, very, very rarely does a GP get any training on how to run a business. And so the amount of reliance they place on anyone in your position is significant. And I think it's underestimated how much reliance that they place on their practice managers, because very often you run the business, you run all the different areas. So anything from staff to patients to finance, you know. And I think, if I'm correct, you actually have a podcast called 10 Hats.
Yeah, and that's right.
I'm assuming that comes from the fact that you have to wear 10 different hats. So I'm certainly interested to hear what all those roles are. But before we go on to that, perhaps you'd like to just tell us how this new organisation, the Institute of General Practice Management, started.
Yeah, well, anyone that has met me before will know that, you know, I'm quite a good talker. I don't like unfairness. And there was quite a noise about 4 years ago, I think, when the new partnership scheme was going. And myself, I at that point, I wasn't interested in being a partner. I wasn't in that kind of practice where it would be appropriate. But lots of my colleagues who either were partners or who were being offered partnership weren't able to get that new partnership payment. So that was that golden hello, kind of £20,000, get some support for business management. And it just seemed so wholly unfair. And there was lots of talk on management groups that people were saying it's unfair, what can we do? And actually, what we could do was professionalise our career. So that's how the IGPM came along. So there was four of us at that point that came together, myself, Robin, Nicola and Joe, all full-time practice managers. We kind of got together and thought, we're going to have to do something about this because we can't keep getting pushed aside. So that's what we did. We decided to set up the Institute and we did it with practice management. We just did an open kind of Zoom meeting with any practice managers, any business managers, any PCN managers that wanted to come along and said, would you support us if we set this up? And that was it, really. It kind of, you know, a social movement. We just decided to do it because we were kind of fed up of being pushed aside, not being recognised. And what NHS England said was that you're not a profession, you know, you don't have a registered body. So that's what we set out to do. And we now have 1,700 people who are associate members. So they pay their £50 a year. I mean, that's all it is. You pay £50 and you support us to be the voice of management. And then we've got a growing number of people who are becoming accredited managers in practice. And that's when they go through that accreditation process that covers those 10 areas that you referred to in the 10 hats. So that accreditation process then gives you MIGPM after your name. So you're a member then of the Institute of General Practice Management. And we've got about 200 people that have gone through that. So now, you know, GPs, employers can look at that person that's coming for a job and think, oh gosh, they've got MIGPM. They've hit that gold standard. CQC can look at the management structure when they come and look at well-led and see MIGPM. That's great. That's a well-led organisation. That's somebody that has covered those 10 areas of management. It's applicable to anybody in a management role in general practice or primary care networks. So that's why we did it, basically, because we'd had enough. And we're sort of four bolshy practice managers that decided to do something about it. And we're forever honoured that our own community of practice managers trusted us to do that. So We know, you know, while practices are very different, Robin's managing partner in her practice in Bristol. Jo actually finished her term in April, but we're forever grateful for the work that she did with us, Jo Wadey. And then Nicola is in a very rural practice in Cornwall. She's multi-site, she's got three practices and she's dispensing. But even with us three having that vast kind of experience, there are still things that we don't do in our practice. There are still differences in different regions. So we have regional representatives across the UK. So wherever you are as a manager in practice, there will be somebody nearby. And because we kind of charge such low fees, those regional reps do that as a volunteer post. So they're there at the end of the phone to do some directing to support individuals locally and just keep growing the organisation, because we know that our strength is in numbers.
That sounds great. And I think it's good to shine a light on the role of practice management. Can anyone sort of, you don't necessarily presumably have to be a practice manager per se. So can anyone in a practice management type role, so we've got so many terms now, we've got finance assistants, we've got business managers, we've got operations manager. I mean, there's all sorts of names. Essentially, it's all involved in the similar area of some form of practice management.
Yeah,
but there's so many areas that, you know, and it varies practice to practice. So can anyone in one of those roles sort of become a member?
Yeah, so you can be an associate member, pay your £50 and support us in any one of those roles. In order to get the kind of post-nominals MIGPM and go through that process, you have to have been in a management role for 2 years, because we think that within those 2 years, you'll have experienced most things that you're going to. Although even after kind of 20 years, people say, God, I've never come across this before. You know, if there's a staff issue that you don't often deal with. But within 2 years, you'll have a good breadth of knowledge of the role. You know, you'll have been through a year end, you'll have done your coif, you'll have appointed, you'd have probably retired somebody, you might have done a maternity leave, you know, you'll have done a lot of those things. Yes. You might not have done a whole site rebuild, but you might have changed the use of a room into something else, or, you know, utilised space differently. And all of those things are important roles for someone managing in practice. And someone who's working as a sort of business manager, or a role that I would see kind of akin to a chief exec almost in one of those large practices, they might not do all those things themselves, but they'll take the responsibility for them.
Right. So if you pay your £50 and you become an associate member, what do you get to that? Do you get newsletters, or is there a way in which you can get assistance if you come across a problem that you've not come across before? Because we do get a lot of our clients where they have an issue, and often they do come to us, but because we're not working in the business, we can give them signposts to where to go. And now we know we can signpost to you, which is great. So what do they get sort of automatically, if you like?
Yeah, so they get all of our toolkits. So we've got a really good one about gender identity that we pulled together last year because of our members saying, you know, what do we do when somebody changes their gender? How do we work that out? You know, what do we do on our computer systems? How do we talk to that individual? You know, what do we need to do? That was really good.
Is
resource.
That from a patient? You'd say a patient or
patient. Yeah. Well, I mean, really around the intricacies of the computer system, how you make sure somebody still gets recalled for, you know, their cytology and their breast screening. How do you do all those things if someone's gender has changed?
I considered that as being an issue, but now you mention it, yes, it's actually quite complicated, I imagine, to navigate it sensitively as well.
Absolutely.
The right way.
You know, having those conversations, knowing the right terminology to use, you know, being authentic with that patient and saying, look, before I start, I want to do what's right for you. And that might not be what's right for the next person. So I'm going to be honest. This is how our systems work. We're going to do the best we can. Yeah. The systems were developed in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, things have changed. You also get access to our appraisal toolkit, which I think in itself is worth £50, not just to the manager, but the person that's employing that manager. Managers in practice tell us all the time they have awful appraisals. that they'll write their own appraisal, take it to their partners and say, well, how does this sound? Will you sign this off? Or the partners will say, will you make sure you do everyone's appraisal, and then no one does the manager's? And I guess that happens in a lot of industries. But as you said, when we first started talking, GPs are great at being a GP and not necessarily that employing staff and maybe staff leadership and HR. So we've developed, along with our accreditation, something that matches that, that fits those kind of 10 domains, those 10 areas. So a GP can pick that up and think, right, if my manager can hit all of these 10 things or needs to develop in two or three of these things, then this is a good, worthwhile appraisal, and give it that time that GPs have for their own appraisal and development. So you get that. And that's kind of a bit of a carrot for partnerships as well, to pay for their managers to be in the IGPM.
I was just about to say that. That's a really good way. And to be honest, £50 after tax is nothing really. So,
So
I would say it's something that the partnership as a whole should subscribe to, certainly if they're going to get that sort of benefit from it.
And we see that in lots of areas, that it's the practice that pays, or it's the PCN that pays for all its practices. Or in some areas, we've seen LMCs do that, you know, LMCs that will, you know, pay for all of their practice managers to be associate members. So you get that. And then probably the thing that we see most sort of traction on is social media. So we've got a closed Facebook group, but we've got, I think there's about 15 different WhatsApp groups, which sound quite overwhelming, but people join the groups that they're interested in, or even join the groups where they've got a lack of knowledge in. So they're kind of pinging all throughout the day, people offering support, people sharing great news. We've got some more social ones where people are sharing their kind of fitness journey. It can be a very lonely job being a manager in practice.
I think that's a very important thing to point out, that I know that in a lot of my clients, it's the practice manager completely on their own. You've got the partners who are a partnership, so they're in a little group on their own.
Yeah.
You've got the staff who are, and you are a member of staff often, if you're not, assuming you're not a partner, but you're set aside to a certain degree because you are managing the business, so staff don't look at you in quite the same way. I don't think so. I think saying it's a lonely job, I think that's probably where you do come into your own, really, that you can make connections with other practice managers who have been through the same issues that perhaps you're going through, and get that internal support, which is,
I often think I'm everybody's friend and nobody's friend, because, yes, you know, on the good days, you're everybody's best mate and everything's going well and it's payroll day and everyone leaves me alone to do that. And then when I've got to do something horrible, you know, you really are on your own. And every manager in practice wants to look after the whole team, but more importantly, I suppose, wants to make sure that the patients are getting the best care possible. And that does sometimes involve making horrible decisions and breaking bad news to staff members. So yeah, we take the rough with the smooth, but, you know, having that resource for us as managers, that, you know, I know that if I put a question on one of our channels and I don't need to think this is a stupid question, you know, I'm experienced, but I've never come across this, I'll ask that question. And if somebody is feeling like, oh God, I don't ask that, what they tend to do is drop a message to one of us that do the kind of admin to the group, and we pose the question, but everyone can see the answer. So, you know, we look after each other as well.
That's a really good idea. I was just thinking, we've talked about these 10 hats or 10 domains. We haven't actually mentioned what they are. Are you able to just run through briefly what you see are the roles within practice management?
Okay, yeah, so the 10 hats, those 10 areas that we see are the things that all managers in practice do to varying degrees. You've either doing that as part of your job or you have responsibility for that. So the first one is about qualifications and achievements. Now, we don't say that you've got to be a graduate. We don't say you've got to have, you know, a master's degree, because we know there are some amazing managers who have worked through practice management that haven't got those formal qualifications, but actually through experience have got what it takes. We also wanted to get managers in the habit of noting down their continuous professional development. You know, GPs and our nurses do that all the time. We don't keep that portfolio. So we wanted to get in the habit of doing that. Then we've got working with other people, working with other organisations. So we're working across that team within our neighbourhoods and our places now, you know, wherever we are in the UK. Might not be PCNs, it might be, you know, another description in Wales or Northern Ireland, clusters, you know, all these different terms. Then we think about leadership and responsibility. Then, of course, managing and improving patient services, which really should be at the core, along with working with patients. So working with patient participation groups, making improvements, you know, looking at that patient survey and those kind of things. Then a huge area, you know, one that you'll know very well, we spend the majority of our money and time on, is workforce. You know, that's where if we don't get that right, we can be wasting an awful lot of money, can't we?
Yes. I mean, we find where a practice, we suddenly find a dip in profits, it's normally where locum costs sort of ran out of control. And it is something that I think practices fell into the trap, I think, last year. And we're now doing accounts for this year, and we can see that some people have really tightened their belts and sort of tried to keep a control on that. And it's amazing how much of a difference just keeping that control has actually made to the general profits of the practice, which then, of course, allows a bit more money to be available to the current staff. And for other things, improvement, we know that the properties aren't very well looked after in some areas, and there needs to be improvements and just painting and decorating, I think, in some cases. That's a really, really good point.
Yeah, and we've all struggled with being able to afford the national living wage increase this year, which every one of us think that our lowest paid staff need to earn more than that, you know, not just the national living wage, but you know, a receptionist 20 years ago wrote names in a book. Now a receptionist is a care navigator. They know about all the services within a population. They're thinking about what's best for that individual. They're signposting. So, you know, nobody should be on a minimum wage, but we're just not funded to be able to do that.
No, and let's be honest, the receptionist obviously generally gets any flack from a patient. They're the frontline man. And if a patient is upset, you know, before they get to see a practice manager or somebody more senior, they get it first. Yeah, and I know in some areas where our clients are, you know, the patients can be quite demanding, just to put it
yeah, you're right. And what, as a manager, you're trying to balance is, you know, the finances. So we're, you know, might not be able to have so many locums, but then access is, you know, such a pressure on us to get people seen within 2 weeks. It's just always that really careful balancing and, you know, keeping our eye on the finances, but also making sure people aren't waiting too long and our complaints and our, you know, we're always conscious that those patients that are in the most need might not be shouting the loud as
well,
the others as
well.
Well,
that's what my worry is. I think very often it is those who actually require assistance more are those often the elderly. They don't want to bother the doctor or whatever. And once they've had one pushback, they won't push again when perhaps they really
they
ought
should.
To.
Yeah. So yeah, workforce, so huge. Workforce. Yeah, huge, great big area. And in large practices, you know, in your PCN practices, you might have a HR lead in those organizations that does all of that. Then, you know, something that you're most interested in, the financial proficiency, practice stability. And we all rely on brilliant specialist accountants, you know, for those practices that have a specialist accountant, the service we get and that understanding, and not just at year end, that you know, someone at the end of the telephone that we can say, gosh, this is happening. What do you think? Have you come across this at another practice? You know, asking those questions for those of us that don't come from a finance background. You'll know yourself, there are plenty of bank managers and people who've come from a finance background now moving into practice management, but we're not all of that background. And, you know, it's a bit of witchcraft, isn't it? General practice accounts. It's, you know, looking at where all the money comes from and what you can claim, what you can't claim, all of those things. You know, if you've worked in a bank, it's totally different. It's, you know, it's a whole different.
Yes, we don't have a lot of bank managers, or ex-bank managers who are practice managers, but I have come across them, and to be honest, they don't always make the best practice managers.
No,
perhaps. Sometimes I say, when you look at finance, just look at it in a straightforward manner. Don't try and complicate it, because that's what we're all about. Because that's our job, to help our clients who are not financial. To understand the accounts in sort of layman's terms and from a common sense perspective, and not sort of dress it up in fancy words. And
I think that's that's the best kind of accountants, ones that, you know, do that for us. Because as you said earlier on, this is just one part of the whole job. So yeah, finance, then estates and facilities management. So, you know, again, if you're a multi-site practice, you might have somebody just doing that. Then legal compliance and governance, that kind of covers the rest of it, the sort of probity and all of those things. So they're the sort of 10 areas that we would see were key for anyone working in a management role in practice. If you were a PCN manager, there's a separate accreditation for them, which just details things slightly differently. And then for the accreditation, there are separate ones for Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, just because their terminology is slightly different. So yeah, there are 10 hats.
Wow. And no. I can think of things. I'm not quite sure. I was thinking, well, where does CQC fit into that? Must be the last one.
There's compliance. Yeah, the legal requirements. And, you know, we're all busy doing our information governance toolkits, or whatever they're called now. I think they've changed their name. But that's another annual thing that we have to do.
Talking of that, changing names, that is the biggest frustration since I started. Everything changes its name. And we all know the medical profession are really keen on
acronyms.
Thank you. They always forget the word.
Yeah, we love acronyms.
And then you get ones and you think, well, which acronym are they actually? Because they've managed to come up with the same letters for two completely different things, which isn't helpful.
And that's the same in medical terminology as well. You know, you can have PID is pelvic inflammatory disease, or prolapsed introvertible disc. So, you know, you have to know which bit of the body. I must say, actually, one of my favourite websites that I direct people to, it's called Acronym Buster. NHS Confed developed it, and you put the acronym in and it tells you what it means. So that's quite a good resource, particularly for new staff as well.
Well, even for our staff, because it keeps changing. And then every year they've slightly changed it. And we're thinking, well, is that, because obviously we always have comparatives. So we have one name one year, and then we're thinking, well, it seems to have morphed into this. Is it the same thing? Are we looking at, but often it is almost the same thing.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Yeah.
Because they've tweaked it, or they've merged a couple of things together. So now it's two items, not one item. And it's, I mean, how you get your heads around all the different types of things and what you have to do to get the money in and how to make claims. And I mean, I couldn't, although I'm very experienced in the finance side of it, I'm a level away from you. So I would not be able to walk into a practice manager's job and have half a clue of where to start. I wouldn't even be able to turn the computer on. That's probably about it.
But you know, I couldn't go and work easily in any other practice. Because
that's really interesting.
The personality of the practice, the way things are done is different everywhere.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Our telephone systems are different. Our computer systems are different. You know, we're kind of wheedling it down to less and less suppliers, but still the partners want things done in different ways. Their relationships are different.
Absolutely.
You know, I joined here in April last year. And I felt lost till about June or July, you know. I could find my room, the toilet and the kettle, but then everything else was like, gosh, who does this? Who do I go to with this question? So yeah, it's a good, probably I'm just about feeling like I know what I'm doing here. That's a year on.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me knowing our clients and knowing how different they are internally and how they all work and manage things. So we have seen a little bit about some campaigns that you're running at the moment. So do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah. So last year we did one called If I Die, It's Your Fault. And it's an awful title because it describes exactly what the campaign was about. So our receptionists, our people on the front desk, as you rightly say, are subject to a lot of abuse. And the one phrase that really they take home with them is that when somebody says, if they can't get an appointment for today, they'll say, well, if I die tonight, it's your fault. And that person who's working on reception is honestly doing their best. They could earn more money working somewhere else. You know, reception staff will tell us all the time they could work in the supermarket or, you know, work in the coffee shop and earn more money. They're here because they care about people. They're here because they want to make a difference. And to be told that kind of thing is wholly wrong. And I know it's not just receptionists that get that in GP practices. You know, we've seen people in shops getting abused. There was a campaign last year from independent retailers with similar things. But what my advice to any patient is, or anybody, you know, trying to access NHS services, is be as kind as you can to that person answering the phone, because they're the ones that are going to get you what you need.
Yes.
And that, you know, that kind of fits into our second campaign, which was Right Care First Time. So that really is about trusting that receptionist to say, you know, I've got this today. Who do I need to see? And actually the answer might not be a GP, because that professional who's answering the phones or who's dealing with the online queries will know that you'll get seen quicker if you go directly to the physiotherapist. You'll get seen by the right professional if actually, you know, you go and see a pharmacist. You know, if there's a problem with your medication, see the pharmacist. Don't wait 2 weeks to see the GP. We can sort you out in 2 days. So that really is a campaign that's aimed at patients to help them to understand that there are so many experts within general practice now.
Well, we're quite often talking to our clients about training your patient and making your patient understand that, as you say, the person they're talking to, the front line, is trying to get them to be seen by the right person. But very often patients just, they think they're just a receptionist and they just don't accept it, which is a really difficult position to put the receptionist, because there's really nowhere for the receptionist to turn. They're trying to help and they don't get it. So that's...
There are some things that partners can do to help. So really simple things like on your recorded message on the telephone system, have one of the GPs saying, my reception team will ask you a number of questions that I have asked them to ask you. That will help us to direct you to the right service. So, you know, from the very beginning, it being the clinicians that are kind of asking those questions. And also just signs in the waiting room saying, our team have been trained to ask you certain questions. This will help you get the service that you need. Because there is that difference between want and need. You know, we all want to see a GP, you know, when we want to see one. But actually, seeing that expert in that area is better for us. If we take that physio example, if I was lucky enough to see a GP tomorrow with my back pain, the GP will then refer me to physio.
Of course.
That might be a 5, 10, day wait. It might even be a 6 week wait in some areas. You could get straight into that service if you listen to the receptionist. So you're above the curve.
Yeah. So where do you see IGPM going? Where do you see the future?
Well, our future really is in numbers. So in order to continue to be that voice, we need people to join us and to believe in us and to, you know that we're, you know, sat at the kind of top table being the voice of managers, that, you know, we talk to the GPC, you know, they will come to us and ask us, you know, this bit in the new contract, this negotiation point, what do you think about this? How does it work in practice? So we want people to support us. We want practices, you know, we want partners to think, I value my managers enough to have them join the IGPM. We value them enough to do a proper appraisal for them. And we want to support them to get that MIGPM professional qualification. So we want partners and organisations to support that. And I suppose our next thing that we're really working on is succession planning, because, you know, lots of, you'll know from your clients that in lots of places, there's not people following us. You know, I'm not looking over my shoulder thinking, who's next? And that's what we should be doing. So, you know, that's something I know you'll have seen in the practices that, yes, you support.
Yes. I mean, we are getting quite concerned about the fact that a lot of our practice managers who are really excellent and have been in the job a long time, but we know they're not going to keep in the job forever. They will come and want retirement at some point. Having said that, we have numerous cases we could probably name where a practice manager has tried to retire or has retired. A new practice manager comes in and doesn't work out, and they bounce back again and to help out. And that help, yeah, out goes from a few weeks to months and even, you know, over a year, because trying to find good practice managers is difficult. And I think from the young people coming up, as you say, behind you, they don't realise that it must be, although we've talked about how challenging the role is, it must also be quite rewarding as well.
Oh, immensely, and, yeah.
And I think maybe your association can help young people think, one, I can do this job, and two, it's a worthwhile job, it is a career.
Yeah,
because these practices are getting bigger and bigger, and actually you're running a big organisation, and it's different from a normal business in the sense that you're not just dealing with a customer, because most businesses are very sort of segregated into different areas, whereas in practice you have to be able to handle everything from the patient to the staff to your partners, and everybody comes to you. I'm sure if there's ever a problem, yeah, let's ask the practice manager, let's see, yeah, you know, what, and hopefully you can signpost rather than actually and delegate the work away. I'm sure that's your aim, but very often there isn't anyone to delegate to, and it lands on your desk and you have to deal with it. So.
And you're right, I often kind of convince people that it's the best job in the world, because we can make quick decisions and quick changes. You know, if you were a hospital manager, you'd have to go to a committee to change something.
Yes.
I can talk to our partners. So we had a partners meeting yesterday here. We can make changes today based on that partners meeting yesterday. We can be that quick. And if something doesn't work, you know, we're not going to harm anyone, but if something doesn't work, we can change it again.
Yes.
And we can do that, and we can be really agile. We can try things. You know, I can go and sit in the waiting room and talk to our customers, our patients. We can contact our PPG and ask them, you know, we're thinking of doing this, what do you think, how does it sound? You know, we're right on that front line and are able to make really good changes.
I'm glad you've sort of mentioned that you can, within your organization, you can make quick changes. And I think that's what the benefit of practices being partnerships, because rather than any other sort of even limited companies or anything where you have to go to a board to make decisions, mm-hmm, when you're in a partnership, as long as you've pretty much got all the partners in the room, yeah, somebody can ask a question and you can go around the table and get an answer there and then. I mean, yeah, we find it here in our own practice where there's only three of us and our practice director. And I think that's one thing that's really important, is decision-making can be almost instantaneous.
It is.
If everyone happens to be in the same place at the same time, somebody can say, I've just had this thought. Can we do X, Y, and Z? Everybody looks around and say, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's try it. And we can, you can move straight away, which any other sort of setup is more difficult. It is more difficult when practices are getting larger and larger, of course, and over different sites, but certainly within sites you can do things. So I think that's really useful. So we can certainly promote you to our partners in our practices.
Thank you.
Practice managers. And now I've seen the logo, I can see that some of our practice managers are members.
Yeah.
They have it accredited signature at the bottom of their emails, which I had to be fair, I hadn't really noticed, but I have now noticed.
You'll see us everywhere now.
But not that many. So it's a really good organisation. I think it's so we have our own organisation. People may know it, IISMA, Association of Independent Specialist Medical Accountants. We have forums and people ask questions. And I find that really useful because people are asking questions as they do the job and other people are coming in and saying, oh, I had that problem and I dealt with it like this, or we have a lot of issues with PCSE, but I won't get that's another whole conversation.
Definitely a whole podcast.
But often there's a PCSE have said this or done this, and you know, are we going to go with it?
we have regular meetings with PCSE. So if any of our members have a particular issue, you know, I can think of some around retirement issues, payments that hadn't happened, you know, any pension issue, any of those kind of things,
we've got the seniority
meetings.
Issue.
Yeah.
That's a whole new question. But
we can raise some of those questions for our members. And if we know that something is happening, you know, across the board, so we're getting lots of our members saying this is happening to me, we can then go and say, you know, this group of practices in this area or this group of managers are having this issue. You know, that there is power in those numbers.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's been great talking to you today. I think we've covered so much. So thank you very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Thank you. So I think we'll end it there. So thank you very much to everyone for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please like and subscribe. And we'll see you again soon. Thank you and goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.